Go ahead. Poke the Blair. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
The Toronto Raptors get back on the court tonight against the Atlanta Hawks in Atlanta. Game time is 7:30 p.m. We will have that game on Sportsnet 360. The Hawks 7-5. The Raptors, still seems kind of odd saying this, the Raptors 12-2 going into the second of four meetings with the Hawks. Of course, the Hawks were the Raptors' opponents in opening night. The Raptors beat the Hawks 109-102 in that particular game, and it's pretty much been a I wouldn't say a smooth ride from that point on for the Raptors, but certainly a successful ride from that point on. I mean, as successful as a ride you can have in a 14 game span, let's put it that way. Eric Corine is the Raptors beat writer for the National Post. You can follow him on Twitter at ECorine. If you're a basketball fan, you probably already are following him on Twitter. Eric Corine joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Good morning, Mr. Corine.
How you doing, Jeffrey?
I'm doing well. Your piece on Monday before the Suns game about and I don't know who the hell the headline writer was, but whoever came up with We the East. Whoever came up with They the East was tremendous.
I'll usually give my headline writers credit, and they do great work, but that was the last line in the article. So they took it from
They took it right from the article.
I'm the genius in this case, Jeff.
It's a good point, though, isn't it? it's a good point in all seriousness because, we've always kind of talked about a discrepancy between the East and West, and it's as pronounced as ever. The Raptors have had a certain degree of success against the West, but, man, when you look at the two conferences, I mean, it's not even close.
And it's been this way for so long, and it just seems to be getting worse. I don't have the updated stats in front of me. In interconference games, the East had won 19 and lost 45 before Monday's games. I think they split six games on Monday. So it's, the percentage is trickling down. It's not just those extra 13 or whatever games that the Suns played against Western playoff teams compared to the Raptors. It's the cumulative effect of having to play those games, right?
Mm-hmm.
That wears on your body. There's no drifting through second or third quarters against the Spurs or the Clippers or the Warriors. And it wears on your mind, too. It's just, everybody talks about playing 48 minutes in this league, and even Dwayne Casey will admit it's more of a fallacy, something to shoot toward and something that doesn't necessarily really exist. But in the West, you almost have to do it, and it's not quite the same when you play Boston or Orlando or, Philadelphia.
Eric Corine of the National Post joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Tell me why this Raptors run. Tell me what about it is sustainable from your point of view, and tell me what about it gives you cause for concern. I mean, obviously they're not going to go 80-2 or whatever it is. They're not going to go 78-4, whatever that's not going to happen. But what do you see that's sustainable here, and what would give you cause for concern?
Well, the biggest cause for concern is it's been a home heavy schedule against a lot of bad teams for the most part. Even when they've played good teams like Memphis, they were missing half of their rotation. If you take away half of the Raptors, 10 players that they usually play, they're probably in some trouble. But, you can only play who you play, and that's what they've done. Early on, I also would have said the way they were scoring was unsustainable. Not a lot of passing that we saw last year after the trade where the ball zipped from side to side. But I think that's been remedied over the last week or two. The ball really is zipping around a bit more. And the offense looks a bit more familiar from last year. The other thing is opponents before Monday's game were shooting about 67% from the line, the free throw line, against the Raptors, which will rise. That's mm-hmm. just they've been playing a bunch of bad free throw shooting teams, fouling guys who you want to foul. But again, that number inevitably rises throughout the season. But the way they're defending in general looks good. They're drawing so many fouls, and that it's every game. It's Lou Williams or DeMar DeRozan getting 4 or 6 trips to the free throw line just on pump fakes or drawing contact 18 feet away from the basket. And you'd say that's unsustainable, but that's what those guys do. They're really, mm-hmm. really good at it. And I wrote about it earlier in the year, and it's a unique skill set to have on your team. I don't know if they're going to stay up as the second most efficient scoring team for the rest of the year, but if they can keep doing that, they'll be in the top 5 or 10, which is where you need to be.
One of the things we've seen pretty consistently this year has been Jonas Valanciunas on the bench late in the game. We saw it again against Phoenix. Now, granted, that I think we could probably say that's a little bit of a different situation because Phoenix went yeah. smaller, and I mean Dwayne Casey's almost obligated to do that. I guess as a coach, you don't like to find yourself in a position where you're always reacting to what the other guy's doing, but at some point in time, you just have to throw up your hands and say, I got to do this to match up what they're doing. But what do you make of Jonas's progress so far? And does it concern you at all that there has still been times this year when the Raptors have been trying to close out a team or have indeed closed out a team, and Jonas is just kind of getting spotty playing time?
It does concern me a bit. Not too much. I think he'll come along, but the Memphis game was a perfect example, right? Dwayne Casey made a decision to go with Chuck Hayes on Marc Gasol, and that decision basically won them the game. Mm-hmm. So let's not, it was that Casey found a way to win, which is what most people care about. But part of me wonders if Valanciunas needs the experience to get better at this. Doesn't that need to happen now versus in April? Because we already saw Chuck Hayes in the fourth quarter of a Game 7 in the NBA playoffs. I'm not sure the Raptors want to find themselves in the same position again. No disrespect to Chuck Hayes, who, has played very well over the last week and is not only a gifted post defender but also a pretty nice passer. But he obviously has limitations, and he's over 30 now. And basically, in this league, you need a gifted two-way center, and that's what Valanciunas could be. But sometimes it feels like his development is being stunted, but they're 12-2. So, mm-hmm. More than ever, I feel Casey's plight here. But at some point, you've got to find a way to balance that. And he is playing almost 25 minutes a game. I'd like to see that maybe a bit closer to 30. And it can't just be against the Utahs of the world where there's an obvious mismatch. It has to be in some situations that are going to expose what he needs to do better.
Eric Kareen joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. The other member of the starting five who hasn't seen a tremendous amount of minutes, Amir Johnson, he's averaging 25.2. What do you make of his game so far? I know that he, I guess ankles and are always going to be a concern for Amir. But Eric, there are times where he just looks... It's not that he looks slow, but there are times where he looks as if he's trying to catch up to...
He looks flat.
Yeah, he's trying to catch up to things all the time.
Yeah, I think his free agency is going to be very interesting. He's never been that box score guy, but after the opener against Atlanta, where he looked springy and he was all over the place, it's sort of been... the Amir that we're used to, mm-hmm. he's still like his plus minus numbers are really, really good still. And they always are because he does those things. He's just in the right place. And we don't appreciate that at full speed because it's very difficult to do that.
Right.
But they already invested a lot of money in Patrick Patterson. I think if you were to ask a Raptors fan which spot needs to be addressed most, it would probably be that 4 spot for mm-hmm. the future. So what do you do with Amir Johnson? This team has valued chemistry above all else so far in the last 12 months or so. And talk to anybody in that room, and Amir is one of the most important guys when it comes to that. But, you know, we've both seen him try to get up from the ice bath after a game. Mm. It can be a painful process to watch. It's going to be fascinating. And it's a guy who loves Toronto and, you know, a team who loves him back. So we're going to find a bit what sort of value is placed on chemistry when he hits free agency in July.
Eric Kareen joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. What do you expect from the Atlanta Hawks tonight?
Sort of where we left off on Monday, not the same sort of explosiveness on the perimeter, although Jeff Teague is as fast as anybody in the league, but they'll gun threes. They can put out a lineup with 5 3-point threats, and that might make Valanciunas scarce again in the final minutes, possibly. They're a dangerous team. They beat Washington in Washington last night. That's good news it's good news for the Raptors because they played last night, and the Raptors, DeMar DeRozan was on NBA TV and they were hanging out in Atlanta while Atlanta was playing a really good team. But Atlanta's a dangerous team. I thought they'd win their division to start the year, and it's still possible. Them, Washington, and Miami are sort of in the same group, and it's a road game, and the scorers in Atlanta often screw up. It's happened twice or three times in Raptors history. So, you know, it's sort of a bad crowd and maybe a choppy game, but, you know, you can't leave Kyle Korver open. You can't leave Paul Millsap open. They'll have to be on their toes defensively.
You know, Eric, one of the things this 12-2 start has, I guess it's covered up or disguised. I don't know what word you would use to describe it, but DeMar DeRozan shooting, I mean, he's just a tick over 40%. Probably no reason to panic, because we know that DeMar DeRozan, we know about the work ethic and all that, and we know that he's certainly better than that. But what has to happen for that percentage to go up? I mean, obviously the balls have to start going in, but is there something he's doing or isn't doing? Is there something the coaching staff can do with him? I don't know, maybe get him some different looks. What explains that lack of finish from DeMar DeRozan?
Well, as you say, I think it will naturally tick up. I think 40% is a bit low. At the same time, he's taken almost 17 field goal attempts per game, and I don't think he needs to do that on this team. Sometimes what's in the playbook, you know, they want him to do that almost. But I think the wings and Valanciunas have to gain more faith in each other. Valanciunas needs to know that the wings are going to pass him the ball, and the wings need to know that Valanciunas, if he gets a double team, is going to pass back. And both of those things are not quite where they need to be right now. And again, we're nitpicking a 12-2 team. So this is, you know, pretty much the craziest conversation in Raptors history right now. but also, you know, I just think it's incumbent on him to know there are so many weapons on this team that he doesn't need to live on those 20-foot jumpers, even if he has a crack. There's plenty of weapons on this team to get them a better look if he just moves the ball. At the same time, I don't want to be too critical of him. He's got the assists are down so far this year, but he's moved the ball better. He's shooting more than 8 free throws a game, hitting 81% of those. Again, that's the most efficient way to score in this league. He's still a very solid scorer, but if he refines it even more, if he operates out of the post just a bit more than coming off a series of screens, it can only help him. It can only help the Raptors. But this is, again, the second most efficient offensive team in the league. So,
yeah, we're nitpicking. We're picking nits.
That's what we do. This isn't normal for us.
Trade rumors and picking nits. Now, we never talk about this stuff, do we?
Yeah, I'm very uncomfortable.
Eric, thanks so much for doing this as always.
Have a good one, Jeff.
Take care. That's Eric Kareen. Does a terrific job covering the Raptors for the National Post. You can follow him on Twitter at @ekareen. His in-game tweets are hilarious at times. And
Yeah, he is right. Don't mean to pick apart a 12-2 team. Although it is interesting to notice a few of the. I think there's a sense that this team, even with its 12-2 record, that there's still a lot more there. Terrence Ross hasn't had a great start, and Valanciunas is down a shade in just about every statistical category. And as we said, DeMar's barely shooting 40%, but the team's 12-2. I mean, that's a testament to their depth and to Dwayne Casey's confidence and comfort with his bench. But it is remarkable when you look at this record and you dig down a little deeper and you go, you know what? They can be better. That might be the scariest thing out of this is the Raptors are 12-2 and three of their starting five haven't really played up to the level we saw on a consistent basis last year. John Schumann is an NBA writer for NBA.com. You can follow him on Twitter. At John Schumann is his Twitter handle. And John Schumann joins us to get a league-wide view of the Raptors. John, thanks a lot for doing this. The 12-2 Raptors play the Atlanta Hawks tonight. We'll have the game on Sportsnet 360. What does the NBA think of the Raptors? Are they surprised at how this team has started, or do you think the rest of the NBA, and I know I'm asking you to get in the head of a couple of hundred people there, but do you think the rest of the NBA will look at this and go, okay, yeah, we kind of saw signs of this last year?
I think so. I mean, I think it's a continuation of what they did last year. I mean, they were the only East team that ranked in the top 10 on both offense and defense last year. So I think that they're doing that again isn't a surprise. I think it's a little, that they're 12-2, that's obviously quite a pace that they're at, but you got to look at their schedule a little bit, realize that they've played 10 of their 14 games at home, that mm-hmm. no other team has played 10 home games at this point. And they're taking advantage of some East teams that really haven't figured things out yet. Some teams that are in transition, teams like, Cleveland, obviously. And, the rest of the East basically stinks. Washington is solid, but hasn't really beat anybody good. So I think there's optimism. I mean, you got to be impressed. I mean, this was a good bench already. And then to have Lou Williams and James Johnson come in and play as well as they have, obviously just makes them, obviously the deepest team in the Eastern Conference. And that's huge, not only for winning games now, but just for their ability to stay fresh, down the line. So I think right now, they're the best team in the Eastern Conference. And whether, depending on how quickly Cleveland gets it together or if Cleveland can ever defend well enough to be a great team, and depending on Chicago's health issues, the Raptors could certainly stay in the top two all season long.
John Schumann of NBA.com joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. We talk a lot and we focus a lot on the Raptors here, and when we do that, we inevitably go back and look at the Rudy Gay deal and go, what a great deal that was by Masai Ujiri. Instant bench. I mean, Vasquez, Patterson, these guys are still, playing significant roles, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. Then I look at the Sacramento Kings, who've actually done okay as a result of this deal, haven't they? I mean, Rudy Gay's been really good for them. Ben McLemore is sort of getting it together. And I mean, what? Their win percentage is over 60%. Unfortunately, in the West, that's not 60% isn't enough to get you in the playoffs. But Sacramento's kind of done okay out of this deal as well, haven't they?
Yeah, and I think their success also starts with DeMarcus Cousins. He just gets better every year on both ends of the floor. I think he's taken a big jump defensively too, where their starting lineup is actually really good defensively, which is surprising because that's a team that, hasn't been above average defensively in a long, long time. So that's I think that's a key, and so it starts with him. and that Rudy Gay doesn't have to carry the load necessarily that he thought he had to carry in Toronto helps, and it helps him be a little bit more. He is playing better than he did, with the Raptors, and you know, it's funny how something can work out for both teams that way.
When you look around the league, obviously there are teams that have surprised this year. Who are some of the disappointments? Cleveland, I guess there's a rush to put Cleveland there because of the record. But, John, I don't know how you were going in the year. I didn't expect them to be as bad as they've been at times this year. But I honestly kind of thought that it was probably going to take, maybe take 20 games for these guys to kind of figure out what they had to do. And maybe more to the point, I thought it was going to take 20 games for Kyrie Irving to get used to playing with Kevin Love and LeBron James. Are there other teams that stand out there to you as real disappointments?
I think Charlotte is one that I look at. They're 4-11. It's a team that was a top 10 defense last year and then really improved offensively as the season went on. They never were great offensively, but they got better as the season went on. They added Lance Stephenson, added some floor spacing with Marvin Williams, but they've just struggled offensively and haven't been as good defensively as they were last year. It's a team that's, they've lost six straight at this point, and they've lost to some bad teams. They've lost to the Lakers and the Knicks, which says a lot. It's a team that should have had, they got two new starters, but should have had more continuity than a lot of other teams in the Eastern Conference that are struggling, given it was year two of Steve Clifford on the bench and with Kemba Walker and Al Jefferson, the other two, main offensive guys coming back. So I think that's the one that I see in the East. In the West, it's hard to pick one because there's a lot of good teams, and the Clippers are probably off to the most disappointing start in that conference. And I think they have issues on defense that may need require a roster change.
John, it was good of you to do this today. Thanks so much.
Anytime, Jeff.
John Schumann. Yep, take care. John Schumann of NBA.com. Giving us the league-wide perspective of the Raptors. And again, just to kind of reiterate, and NBA.com right now has its they've got a list of their 8 surprises this year, ranking them in order. The Toronto Raptors are number 1. Probably not a surprise that they're doing well this year. I think a lot of people saw what happened last year and probably looked at the Raptors going into this season as a team that was on the up, but I don't think anybody thought they'd be 12-2. And as the article points out, the reasons for this great record, you heard both Eric and John talk about it, relatively easy schedule, a home schedule. But as the NBA.com article points out, DeMar DeRozan isn't shooting as well as he has in the past. Jonas Valanciunas statistically down from last year. Terrence Ross has been inconsistent. So essentially the NBA.com article is making the point that, hey, as good as this team has been and as many breaks as they've had from the schedule makers, and let's keep in mind that this does come back to bite the Raptors. If you take a look at their schedule in December and take a look at their schedule down the stretch, their schedule in December is a beast with the World Junior Tournament coming in here. I think at one point they play 7 of 8 on the road, so they basically give back what they got this at the start of the season with a home schedule. But if you put all that aside, there's still room for 3 of the 5 starters in this team to get better, and they're still 12-2. That says an awful lot about the bench. It says an awful lot about Dwayne Casey as well. The hell's going on in Edmonton? The Oilers, losers last night, an awful loss to Dallas, just a horrid goal let in, a knuckleball, almost a rink-length knuckleball, terrible line change resulting in another goal. Dallas Eakins, after the game, his post-game interview, he just didn't have any answers. He just didn't have any answers. I mean, they were the type of goals you just can't explain. The Oilers have yet to win. Think about this. They have yet to win within their conference this year. Now, that's a tough conference. But the Oilers have yet to win a game in their conference. They are buried once again. And believe it or not, there are people who look at the Oilers and wonder, these guys, there's no way they can find themselves in the Connor McDavid sweepstakes. They can't be that bad, can they? It's not a very good team in Edmonton. It's not a very good situation in Edmonton. And it appears as if it's an organization that is really just paralyzed right now by an absolute fear of making a move involving one of its young players. It's a move everybody in hockey. Here's the problem. Everybody in hockey has known what the Oilers have needed to do for the past 2.5 seasons. They just haven't done it. Mark Spector is a columnist for Sportsnet.ca. He's been all over the Oilers story, including rumors that David Perron may end up being shipped to the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Blue Jackets in Edmonton have had trade discussions lately. Clearly, the Oilers have gotten to the point where they've decided they need to do something. But wouldn't you know it, being the Oilers, they're not looking at moving one of their core young guys. They're looking at moving a guy who might be a third liner on a real good team. I don't know what you're going to get for David Perron, but Mark Spector of Sportsnet.ca will join us. We'll talk a little Oilers, figure out what's going on with that mess. This is the Jeff Blair Show. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now more of The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Because one's got a weasel and other's got a flag. One's on the pole, shove the other in the bag. With the rerun shows and the cocaine knows ya. The daytime crap of the folk singer's club. He hung himself with a guitar string. A slab of turkey neck and it's hanging from a pigeon wing. But get right if you can't relate. Trade the
How many people are there in that room right now? Like six people in there. What is this? Tim and Sid? How many people does it take to put together Tim and Sid? 10? Anyhow. Maybe 14. 14 people to put together Tim and Sid? Pretty much. We, on the other hand, have a nice tight-knit unit here. Well, it's tight. I don't know about knit. We got a real treat for you, by the way, at 11 o'clock. And I'm gonna tee it up for you by... by the way, I forgot to tell you, we're giving away Bills tickets at some point in the 11 o'clock hour. I don't know when. You'll just have to listen to get them. We're giving away a pair of Bills tickets to Sunday's game against the Cleveland Browns at Ralph Wilson Stadium. It's supposed to be like 9 degrees on Sunday. Rain. It's against the Cleveland Browns, and the Bills, their playoff hopes hanging by a thread. But if they beat the Browns, they're right back in the wild card picture. Not for long, probably, because there's no way in hell they're going to beat Denver or Green Bay. But if they get out of the weekend at 7-5, they're right there. And we're going to give away a couple of tickets to go to that game. The tickets also include a pass to pregame hospitality, the Rogers Tap House. And we'll figure out a way to do that. That'll be in the 11 o'clock hour. That's one thing we've got in 11 o'clock. We've also got Cliff Floyd, MLB analyst for the MLB Network. And I don't know if you remember in Baseball Central, in the summer we had him and his father-in-law here. They were pitching a drywall, the drywall axe, which they'd invented. Cliff's also invented some protective headgear here for kids, for ball players as well. Anyhow, Cliff and his father-in-law went on Dragon's Den. And you'll be able to see that tonight at 8 o'clock on CBC. If you go on YouTube, you can get a look at the promo for it and watch Arlene Dickinson just like melt literally in Cliff Floyd's arms. It's quite amazing. So that'll be on tonight at 8 o'clock, and Cliff will join us. We'll discuss the drywall acts, his experience in Dragon's Den. You're probably going to bust his balls a bit for wearing a New York Mets jersey on the show. I could have loaned him an Expos jersey, and it probably would have fit him. But anyhow, Cliff Floyd at 11 o'clock. Lots of baseball talk. Joe Siddle at 11:15. Tim Raines will join us at 11:40. He's the outfield base running coordinator for the Toronto Blue Jays, also on the Hall of Fame ballot. Should be in the Hall of Fame by now, but also on the Hall of Fame ballot. So we'll talk to Mr. Raines at 11:40. That's a pretty good hour of baseball. Cliff Floyd, Joe Siddle, Tim Raines. Before we do that, though, let's talk about the gift that keeps on giving, shall we? The Edmonton Oilers, 3-2 losers to the Dallas Stars last night. And, boy, all the earmarks of a team that is just absolutely snake bit. A knuckleball goal from another area code, just a horrible line change. We haven't seen line changes like that since Ron Wilson was coaching the Toronto Maple Leafs. Mark Spector is a columnist with Sportsnet.ca. Spec has the unfortunate job of spending a great deal of time around the Oilers, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Maybe not unfortunate. I shouldn't say unfortunate, because they certainly are a story, aren't they, Spec?
Yeah, but it's the same story, you know. It just gets, well, I guess it's not the same story. Just when you think it's hit rock bottom, they drill further here in Edmonton. Maybe that's my oil field analogy of the day. We're fracking now the depths of the NHL standings to see if they can get a little lower up here.
Tell you what, I've heard that often. I've heard them described as the fracking Oilers so many times lately that it...
They are the fracking Oilers.
They are the fracking Oilers.
Sam's call them.
Yeah, that's about as close as we can get to that without getting a CRTC citation here. We haven't had one of those in a while.
At least they fired the goalie coach, so that ought to turn things around.
Oh, that made a difference. That made a difference. Here's the thing. We had Eddie Olchuk on yesterday, and Eddie was, you know, looking back to his time in Pittsburgh as head coach of Pittsburgh, and just talking about how teams go through a process of self-evaluation. And I think Eddie, like a lot of people, is looking at this situation and, you know, asking the question. We understand you've got a good young core. You've got good young forwards. But you know what? You've got obvious needs in your team. You've got things you have to do to make this team better. It would be great if every team in sports could hang on to his prospects all the time and have them all develop. But at some point, you've got to have enough faith in your internal analysis to say, you know what? This guy's here, this guy's here, this guy's here, this guy's here. Let's move the guy that we rank at the bottom. Whether or not he turns into a great player right now, this is how we rate these guys. Let's try to get something for the guy we rate at the bottom. What? Why does no one want to make that call in Edmonton? Is that an ownership issue? Is it on the GM?
I would say it's probably an organizational issue. Here's what they're afraid of in Edmonton. It's not that, let's use Jordan Eberle as a prime example. Put him on Pittsburgh, he'd be a way better player. Here he's just, you know, he mixes in with the sort of softer skill guy, perimeter guys that there's so many of. But here's your problem. And this is in no way in a defense of what the Oilers are doing, because I've been pretty aggressive lately against what they're doing. They don't get free agents, the top free agents. They don't come to Edmonton. That's just the way it is. You cannot get a big free agent to come here. You know, even David Clarkson, they outbid the lease for him, and thank their lucky stars he chose Toronto. So that avenue to increase your team with top-level players just doesn't exist in Edmonton. You don't get that guy. So now go trade for first-line players. Well, I don't know the answer to this, but I'll ask you the question. What percentage of the top, you know, first-line really good players you can build a team around, what percentage of those guys have no trade clauses in their contract, even a list of 10 teams. Because
a lot.
Every one of those guys has Edmonton on his list, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when you're Edmonton, again, I'm not defending them. These are facts. Edmonton can't get that guy through trade either. So there's only one way, really, for Edmonton to get, unless they pull off a miraculous trade and you know, an eye trade for your prospect that you don't know how good he is and he turns out to be great, you know, like Calgary getting Mika Kipris off or something.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they make that trade, there's only one way to get first-line players in the city of Edmonton to get them to come live and play here, and that's to draft them and force them to come live and play here. So when you've done that, to start trading those guys away is truly at your own peril, because replacing them, you know, what are you going to get for Jordan Eberle out there? Are you going to get another first-line player, or are you going to get a couple of second- or third-line players for him? Well, that's what they're thinking. It still might be the right thing to do, but that's the peril at which the Edmonton Oilers operate.
You see, my thinking on this, though, is you've got these good young players. And the other thing, if you take kind of a small market approach, and I don't mean that as a negative, but if you look at it and say, okay, we're Edmonton, you're right. We're on just about every significant player's no trade list. That's fine. Part of the way you manage being a small market in any sport, though, is you look at it and go, hey, this is the situation we're in, but you know what? This is our window of opportunity right now. I mean, it's great that we've got all these young players. We're not going to have them together for 6, 7, 8 years. This is our window of opportunity. Maybe we've got to add a grinder or a number two guy, a guy with some grit, whatever, however you want to describe it. Maybe we have to give up a talented guy to get that guy, because all the other talented guys who are still here, we got to win at some point, and we're not going to win just by treading water.
No question, and you got to peel one off the group and sacrifice him, like you say, and in fact trade that guy for two grittier, better players. There's no doubt, and that's, you know, they're nibbling around the edges looking to trade David Perron here, who's a very good player. I quite like David Perron, but he doesn't, you know, he's outside of the
group. Mm-hmm.
You know, and the other thing, they have Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, basically your first line, all on lengthy contracts that probably will turn out to be decent contracts. If they ever get a team built around these guys, in 3-4 years, you'll probably be pretty happy with the numbers. So that part's working out okay. Justin Schultz, the guy that 30 or 29 teams were bidding for, I'm not sure if you had that bidding war again that there'd be 10 teams in there the way he's
mm-hmm.
playing. He's funny. He was that NCAA defenseman that everybody overreacted to.
Yep.
You know, remember the when all this started on these undrafted free agents, I believe one of the first guys was Gustafsson, the goalie, remember,
yep,
in Toronto.
Oh, and the Leafs loved Schultz. I mean, everybody loves Schultz, but
everyone loves Schultz, but these guys get this allure. Remember Gustafsson was,
yep,
this European goalie that no one had drafted, and he came over and there was a bit of a lottery, and everyone said he's the best goaltender outside of North America. And where is he now? He's a backup. He's just below average goalie.
Mm-hmm.
And Justin Schultz is, you know, he's just an average, like, he's nice offensively, but he's just a train wreck in his own end. And he's like so many of these American college kids. He's afraid of his own shadow in an NHL game, doesn't hit anybody, doesn't want any part of confrontation. I mean, nothing. You know, he's not anywhere close to the guy people, not just the Oilers, to the guy everybody else thought he was, too. He's not even close.
Speck, what if I made you general manager of the Oilers? I'm not going to ask you to make a fantasy trade, but what commodity do they need right now? Like, what commodity do they need this morning?
A goaltender.
That's simple.
A goaltender. That has, you know, there again, everybody else builds from the goalie up the middle when they're doing a rebuild, right? You build from the goalie
mm-hmm.
out. This team built from the wings in. You know, and guess what? There's some formulas that you shouldn't tamper with. They built from the wings in, and it is not working. They need a goalie, and they need a goalie, and the other thing they need is a goalie, because they don't even have one right now.
When does Daryl Cates kind of step in here and go, guys, we're going to do this? I don't pretend to know him as a businessman or as an owner, but I've got to think that, you know, given his status in that community, or given his perception of his status in that community, is probably the best way to put it. He's got to be just beside himself right now.
Well, he's a different cat. Like, I don't tell you what, I'm one of the sort of the you know, I don't know how to say it. I've been writing hockey in this town a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say this. Jim Matheson has been writing hockey in this town for a really long time, like 35 years.
Yeah.
I believe he's met Daryl Cates twice.
Okay.
I'm not sure he's ever shaken Daryl's hand. You know, Daryl Cates is a ghost when it comes to the hockey circles in this town, and he lives primarily in Vancouver. And all the, people always ask me, what do you think he's thinking? I don't have a hot clue what Daryl Cates is thinking. I don't know him. I don't see him. I've never spoken really with him for more than 30 seconds. So here's what I do know. This is a guy who grew up in Edmonton and spent a large part of his high school and university years doing the best he could to be at the same party with all the boys on the bus Oilers when they were winning cups.
Mm-hmm.
He hung around those guys religiously as a younger guy, and now he's bought the team of his dreams. He's an Edmonton kid. He bought this club. He's got a rink going up that's going to be fantastic. And he hired Kevin Lowe, and he hired Craig McTavish, and he's thus far completely stuck with them. You know, ask me the question, if I bought the team tomorrow, what would I would do? I'd clean that front office out so fast. I mean, it wouldn't be funny. There wouldn't be a name bar left in there if I owned this team for 30 seconds. Everything needs to change.
Would Dallas Eakins have a job there?
No. No chance. You know, it can't be the same. It has to change. It's got to start with a proven general manager that's been in a winning organization and knows how winning organizations go, because this one's forgotten. It's like Toronto. There's no winning DNA left in this. Even though they all won cups as players, none of them know how to build a team here. It's pretty evident, right?
Beckett, it was great to join us today. It's, like I said, it's a kind of a depressing story to keep following. But
yeah, I know. Phone someone else next time, will you?
I know. We want you're our Oilers guy. Who are you going to call? You're our Oilers guy. Look, you know what?
I got to move. Is that what you're telling me?
No.
Calgary's pretty good. Can I go down there?
You're the guy that I was when I covered the Montreal Expos. You know, somebody needs to talk to somebody about the Expos moving to Buffalo. Call the guy at the Gazette. That's just the way it is. You know that. You know when you worry? Speck, you know when you worry? Is when we start calling Maddie instead of you. That's when you worry.
When they stop calling. Hey, I'm at your service, Jeff, anytime.
I know you are, Speck. I appreciate it. Take care. That's Mark Spector of Sportsnet. Does a terrific job. You can follow him on Twitter at Sportsnet Speck, of course, on sportsnet.ca, and he'll be all over anything with the Oilers. Elliot Friedman up on our sportsnet.ca website right now has got some information on the David Perron rumors. David Perron possibly to the Columbus Blue Jackets. Anisimov's the guy reported to be possibly going to returning to the Oilers. But as Elliot points out, there are a couple of other teams that might be interested, including the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Montreal Canadiens. David Perron would certainly fit in well. Frankly, he'd fit in well with any team, with any playoff-bound team. You would absolutely take that guy on your team in a heartbeat. Absolutely. We're going to take a break. I want you to go to YouTube or someplace. You got to find this clip of Cliff Floyd and his father-in-law trying to get funding for the drywall acts on Dragon's Den. It'll be on Dragon's Den tonight on CBC if you want to see Cliff. And I have no idea how it turns out. Don't know if they get the funding. But I'll tell you what, based on what I saw, my guess is that Arlene Dickinson gives the thumb up to giving Cliff some money, based on what I saw anyhow. Cliff Floyd from the MLB Network, former Expo, Marlin, Met, Red Sox. Probably missed one. Cliff Floyd joins us. Joe Siddle joins us, our Blue Jays radio analyst. And then at 11:40, Tim Raines, outfield and base running coordinator with the Toronto Blue Jays, Hall of Famer. I don't think Raines gets in this year, but I'm absolutely convinced that at some point Raines is going into the Hall of Fame. He may have to wait around to the end, but I'm absolutely convinced that he's one of those players who will get the requisite 75% and get into the Hall of Fame. So there you go. Cliff Floyd, Joe Siddle, Tim Raines. It's like the Montreal Expos Hour. It's a Jeff Blair Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.